where you see the evolution of the sigil magic. And then you have, right, numbers, which is gematria, talismans use a lot of magic, and then you have letterism involved into that. And from that, I think, evolved everything that we have now. And the memetic occultism is, right, this internet meme in its simplest form is a form of magic that the regular layperson can understand.
What's up, everybody? It's Isaac. You're listening to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. Today, we've got an expert in the house with us, Juan Ayala from One on One Podcast. We've done many shows together. This is the first time I got him on here where I could pick his brain, because he's an expert. Don't let him fool you. He's a modest guy, but he's a true expert in this strange, dark realm of the occult. My man's been, he's been digging through the most obscure magical textbooks. I mean, it blows my mind, because I've tried reading some of this stuff, and it's not easy. So he's got a gift, he's got a talent here, and he's joining us to break down some of the most complex occult topics of alchemy and all kinds of stuff, ritual magic, chaos magic. And he does it in a way that we can all understand what's being relayed to the initiates that are reading these documents and actually doing these practices. Because all these things are manifesting in our current age, which is one of the main themes we're going to talk about. We're going to cover revelation of the method, which is the system we're in right now. If there's a map, you are here. We're in the revelation of the method time frame. We're going to talk about balancing open-mindedness with conspiracy culture, chaos magic, memetics, Gospel of John, and the examples of using magic with text and sacred geometry, the Book of Enoch. And of course, you know, Juan's known for his homunculus talk, and he's going to give us a little bit of homunculus moonchild breakdown. That's definitely going to be interesting. We're going to hear about Jack Parsons' Babylon workings, the divine androgyne, balancing opposing forces, aliens, E.T., Terrence McKenna, H.P. Lovecraft. It's nuts. And then at the end, we're going to, of course, we're going to go back to Twin Peaks, because Juan is being initiated into Twin Peaks as we speak, right? He's going through the Grey Lodge with us. So we're going to talk about Twin Peaks before we let him go. But yeah, today's going to be a real banger of a show. And you can, while you're listening, go follow him on the social medias. Go subscribe to his podcast, the One on One Podcast. In fact, I'm listening to, he's got a show with Nick Cage's son. Yep. Yeah, that's right. I've got links in the show notes where you can get to his link tree. You can find all of his links. He's got podcasts, social media. He's got comic series. Him and Paranoid American always work together. You know, we've had Paranoid American on here many times. Me and him go way back, way back. He was one of the first contacts I made in this strange conspiracy world back in 2011. And you can go to Juan's website as well, tjojp.com. That stands for the One on One Podcast. So just go there, and you can get your own homunculus manual while you're there. So check it out. Support the show. Support all his works, because, man, I don't know how he does it, but he's digging through all these occult texts. And today he's going to share all of his knowledge with us. Without further ado, let's go. Juan Ayala from the One on One Podcast. All right, everybody. Today we've got a very special guest. We've done many shows together, and the truth is, I don't know him that well, and I want to get to know him. This is a little bit of a, I don't know, a bromance date of some kind, because I look to this guy to be an expert in the fields of the topics we've been talking about for all these years, and I honestly want to get to know. I've listened to many of his shows, and I highly recommend you subscribe to his podcast. If you like my podcast, you're going to love his podcast, and I'll put the links in the show notes. But without further ado, we've got a very special guest. He's the chosen one. It's Juan Ayala from the One on One Podcast. Welcome to the show.
Dude, quit gassing me up, bro. Don't be doing that, dude.
Oh, dude, you're the man, dude. I've been, as you know, I've been researching these things for all these years. I don't profess to be an expert on any of them, but I'm always intrigued by the occult. And by one of my red pill, so I've got multiple red pill daddies, and Freeman Fly was one of them. He's the guy that pushed me down the path of understanding occult, alchemy, magic, Freemasonry, these kinds of things, which I've yet to say that I've figured out any of those topics yet. But he's the one that got me down those paths of trying to understand the literature and the books and the people and the figures. And it's also extremely confusing to everyone, normies and experts alike. But you, my friend, are crushing it. You are going through these textbooks that most of us, you know, I know because I've been there. I want to read these books and understand it so I can talk to the audience and explain the symbolism and the ideas. And I would say, I don't know, 70% of the time I end up closing the book and saying, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. So, you know, kudos to you, man. You're crushing these heavy duty topics on your podcast, man. So I wanted to get you on here because I want to get to know who you are, honestly.
Well, I appreciate that, dude. Thank you. And I'm trying my best, dude. I'm on that same boat with you. And I think that it's really crazy because when I do talk about certain occult topics, it ruffles feather. And I don't know if you've experienced this where you get cryptic emails, or I think I've screenshotted a few of them and I've sent them to you where it's like certain group. I get a lot of emails. The little man is a distraction. They're talking about the homunculus is a distraction, which, hey, it could be a distraction. It could be something that I'm misconstruing because I'm not initiated, Isaac. I call myself an armchair occultist, but I'm also a Christian. So I'm in this realm where I was raised very religiously, but I want to understand these topics because how can you truly know and stand in your faith if you don't know the full picture type of thing? Now, for some people, that's blasphemous or that's heretical. I fully understand that because I was told I was going to get possessed if I read the Book of Enoch or even a lot of these other books where I've been warned by certain people. And you got to understand that when you're talking about certain topics that people devote their entire lives to studying and hear this random internet guy covering it, doing a PowerPoint on it, and maybe you're hitting on the correct point or not hitting on the correct point. I've had people tell me, oh, you're closer to the truth than you might know. Again, I'm not initiated because to the uninitiated, these texts mean one thing. To the initiate, they mean something completely different. So, and I'm never going to know because I'm not going to be initiated into any of these mysteries because I don't have the desire to. I don't think we should because I don't think anything is secret anymore, Isaac. I think that it's all available to you. And if people just read, if they just read, they might extract some of that. And dude, I've been there, man. There's books that I read section by section and I'll read a little bit, 10, 15 pages, put it down for a day, for a week, for a month. And it might be further down the road that I'm doing something completely different. I go, whoa, that's what that meant from 2 months ago. That's what that meant. And now it makes perfect sense because this is how this works. And I don't know if you've experienced it, Isaac, because you're an OG in the game, dude. I started podcasting mid-2019 and I actually recorded a full year's worth of episodes before I released my podcast in February of 2020. Oh, okay. So yeah, well, that's the thing. Good timing. Some would say no, but that's the way I did it. And I was like, oh, great. I released my podcast and here the world's going to end. Everything's crumbling down. Of April peak of that thing, you know, where everyone was freaking out. I was still cranking out episodes. I was still doing episodes. And I really cut. I found you through Amazon once upon a time. Probably 3-4 years ago. Now I found you through Amazon. It was one of your alien books. And I remember like looking at it, going, damn, the Illuminati and aliens. I was like, yo, I'm going to hit this dude up to come on my podcast. When I looked you up, I was like, oh, this dude's a big wig. Has tons of followers. Probably never going to answer my email. And some people who I emailed 4 years ago, I ended up working with, you know, recently, Mind Unveiled. I had hit him up 4 years ago. I did a video with him. You know, we collabed on stuff. So it's like, you never know who's watching, but I really started hitting it hard mid-2019 and I launched 2020, February 2020 when I believe Nick Hinton was my first interview ever.
Oh, wow. Way back then, huh?
Way back when, bro. And he was like, dude, I said yes to your episode because you had told me you were going to make a podcast and I saw you doing it. So that inspired me. You know, Nick's a cool guy. Shout out to him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's these topics. They're really interesting, dude. And that's why
go ahead.
that's why I can't believe that some people will disregard all this, you know, the supernatural and the not really the supernatural or paranormal, but just these ideas of these grown men dressing up in certain attire and doing ceremonial rituals, right? Or even Parsons going to the desert with his buddy and trying to summon the Scarlet Woman. You know,
there's a strange thing going on right now. And when you say that, you'd be surprised at who's listening and who's watching this sort of sub niche, because, you know, in my history was I started with, let's talk about all things conspiracy. And then it started niching down into what I found more in, because, you know, conspiracy got more into political stuff and who's going to Bilderberg this year. And that, all that politics stuff is just such a distraction to me. And I don't think it's very fruitful for anything. I think it's just a way of people to grift, to make money by selling you fear and the false promises of this person saving us. And it's just a bunch of BS. So, and that's what every real OG conspiracy theorist taught me. David Icke, Bill Cooper, they all said the same things about this distraction. I'm somewhat fairly political in the sense that I pay somewhat attention, but it's not going to be the thing that I devote what little free time I have to investigating and researching, because to me, I don't think it's worth that. But I started niching down into the occult stuff, because that to me is the most fascinating. And there's not a lot of folks that are actually talking about this stuff, at least not ones that know what they're talking about, or at least consult the original, you know, books and documentation. So you know, there's not a ton of us out there. So I, for instance, I think I talked to you about this on text message, but Genesis P. Oridge, who's a very prolific, he's dead now. Genesis goes by the they them pronouns long before it became this sort of woke thing. So I respect that on some levels, but they were in contact with me on email back in, I think it was like 2015 or so. And I didn't believe it was actually Genesis. And I said, I want you to tweet from your, you know, Twitter account, like something to me, Isaac, whatever. And Genesis did it. And I said, holy crap. Like, that's pretty wild. Cause Genesis is the founder of the industrial rock movement and a prominent magician, occultist. And look, I'm not saying like I'm friends with Genesis or I agree with the things Genesis was saying or doing at all. But the point is, I think the people that are into this occult stuff, which I don't want to say we know, but we highly suspect and can kind of believe that high level politicians, celebrities, and so on are familiar with these things or practicing these things or both. Now it's become this revelation of the method thing. And we're in this weird position. You and I believe you said you're a Christian. I'm also a Christian, a very crappy one. And we're in this weird position now where I think on some levels we're, I don't want to say helping them, but we're facilitating the revelation of the method, which is, I think, is where they're taking us, man. What do you think about that? Do you have a conscious morality sort of dilemma with this? I don't myself. I think it's best. I'm one of those guys is information. Give me the truth, man. Lay it on me and let me make the decision. So that's how I look at it, is I'm revealing and I let the people choose. You want to be a Luciferian, knock yourself out, but know that that's the path you're going down.
Yeah. And that's the, I honestly wish sometimes, Isaac, watching The Matrix, right? The scene that everyone knows, in ignorance is bliss. Sometimes you just want to eat the steak. You don't want to have to watch a movie. You want to just be able to enjoy the movie without getting all this woke stuff in your face or all this cryptic symbology, which some people, here's a weird flex, bro. I had the ex-son-in-law of Anton LaVey call me an idiot on a show. Wow. They brought indirectly, like, he didn't say I was an idiot. He said that the line of thinking was idiotic, and the line of thinking was that the elites use occult symbolism to influence the masses. That's idiotic.
Are you serious? That's yes. The most misguided take I've ever heard. I think even normies wouldn't agree with that. Was that Taylor Swift's husband?
The one that looks like Taylor, yeah, her ex-husband, and I forget his name. I don't know his name. People can look it up though. I'll probably clip it, but that's my weird flex of the day.
Oh, that's cool.
And so that's the thing. I don't know. And sometimes I wish that I'm the kind of guy, I agree with you. And what I do, the approach that I take is I present the information and you can make the connections that you want with it. Obviously, we insert our own ideologies and our own concepts as to what might be going on. But I present the information to people. I don't push information down people's throats because I came from that. I don't like that. I don't like the fact that some people believe that they have it all figured out, that their cosmology is the one. It's like, no, we are all parts of this. We all have the pieces of the puzzle. And it's all just jumbled up. But I'd rather know that these things are going on, whether I do something with that information or not, than not know, right? Then not be participating in this ritual, whatever it is, involuntarily. Well, it's like, okay, we know, and anyone can tell you, bro, a conspiracy that everyone agrees to is the government is corrupt. Anyone you ask, like, hey, is the government corrupt? Yeah, the government's corrupt. Are they lizard shape-shifting reptilians? Now that's kind of, and I'm a skeptic, bro. And that's why I'm also here. And that's why I've reverted to going to the source material, even if I have to translate it, which I know people don't like AI, but I've been using AI to translate some of these source texts to really extract the information and make conclusions myself and not rely on information that's being relayed to me. From who? From a person who has a piece of paper and it has a title that makes them better than me. It's like, oh, I'm an academic. Okay, that's what makes you and I any different, that you paid to go to school.
Yeah.
And you got recognized by a whole bunch of other people who did the same thing, right? No disrespect to any academics. There are good ones, but that's a kind of sort of secret society on its own. You're shunned and looked down upon if you don't have that title or that paperwork to say that you're part of that. So I think it's important, Isaac, to bring awareness to the people. And how you said, let's present the information. How you do? You do a great job at these things. And what I like about channels like yours and like Donut, that you're bringing like the current events. And it's like me when I'm looking at alchemical texts, and that's why I like collaborating with Donut, for example, because then I'm able to mix the old type of stuff from the 16th, 15th century. Go, okay, oh, they're still doing the same thing, except now it might be Taylor Swift at the superb owl type of thing, right? Where it's like, now it's just shifted. It's like how Manly P. Hall said, the alchemist is the only thing that's changed is they're not in a cave anymore and they're not wearing robes. Now they're wearing lab coats and there are four walls around them in a modern setting. And I think that the modern occultists is also, some of them still participate in the woo-woo regalia that they put on. I mean, look at the king, bro, wearing a crown with a cape and a specter or whatever they call it. Like, dude, that's LARPing. That is ceremonial in nature. That staff and that crown was passed down through the generations because they probably believe that it has some sort of talismanic power, and they all sit on the same rock, right? They all sit on the same rock and their locations are all in the same place because it goes back to that occult belief. If you don't believe it, they do. And I think that it's best that we expose this revelation of the method and let the people know, like, hey, this might be going on, even if, because you know that people call us out that we're conspiracy theorists or that we're crazy or that we're reaching or that, like, are we though? Can you truly prove the opposite?
I think people, a lot of people in 2020, we had such a weird situation. That's why I think it was actually a good time for you to launch your podcast, because I know the statistics of what my podcast was doing pre-2020, and everyone became a conspiracy theorist in 2020. It just blew up. Everyone all of a sudden was questioning the nature of reality, questioning the institutions, questioning the things that were being told, and they're all correct, because there's this cognitive dissonance that happens. And I think if you're not a conspiracy theorist on some level, or at least open to the ideas of a conspiracy theorist, you're very you're closed-minded, you're closed off, or you're just burying your head in the sand and you don't want to be involved in that, which I actually respect. Kind of like you're talking about with the Matrix, with what's his name, Cyrus or Cypress, whatever his name was.
Yeah, he looks like Tate.
So
he's talking about the Matrix,
eating the steak, man. Like, sometimes I don't wonder if that's not the smartest way to go, is just to keep it basic and, you know, watch the sports ball team on the weekends, go to work and love your family and eat dinner and, like, simple, bro, simple. And I think, man, maybe that's the right path instead of getting wrapped around the axles, worried about all this stuff. Maybe the distraction is part of the big agenda of the ritual.
Yeah, and I constantly battle with that. Like, am I going crazy? Am I seeing all these same numbers over and over again of synchronicity? And you got to be open minded. You also have to have some sort of strength as well to deal with a lot of these topics. Because look at any occultist, bro, they went crazy. Yeah. They went crazy because that's the phenomenon that like the occult is this blob that constantly changes. And dude, alchemy, I've put hours into alchemy. I've put hours and hours into alchemy to want to understand. I've taken alchemy courses to read text, to decipher plates. I've done all that. And I'll tell you right now, Isaac, I don't understand it any better than I did when I first started.
Well, that's what, you know, I was reading Anton LaVey's The Satanic Bible, and there's a passage in there where he talks about how, you know, because Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan, they practice ritual magic. And he talks about how silly all this occult stuff is, in the sense that all the authors that wrote all these books, because they were so busy trying to like hide the sort of true language that they're trying to speak and trying to keep the uninitiated from understanding what they were doing. And he kind of mocks it and says, like, you guys are ridiculous. He's like, we're just gonna do it, man. And that's one of the strange things that I feel like we're living through right now, is this sort of chaos magic. I was listening to your episode you just released with Donna and Paranoid American. Mm-hmm. Great episode, by the way. But you guys were talking about memetics and Trump as the chaos candidate and all these sorts of ideas of chaos magic, which is, you know, taking the ritualistic sort of dogma element out of magic and just saying, look, everybody, just do what you want to do, whatever works, do it. Which is, I'm studying Buddhism right now a little bit, and that's kind of what they say is, with Buddhism, when you're studying it, it's like, just take what you like that works and just leave the rest at home. Who cares? Like, if you don't care that Siddhartha Buddha was under the Bodhi tree in year, you know, 2000 BC or whatever, like, who cares? Don't worry about it. Just take your meditation that makes you feel good and do that. You know,
nothing is true and everything is permitted. And yeah, the idea of memetics is an actual field of study. It's the spread of information. A memetic is the smallest piece of information. That's a meme. Now, we know the internet memes are a thing, and I think that's an evolution of the magic square. And I presented that in that episode where you see the evolution of the sigil magic. And then you have, right, numbers, which is gematria. Talismans use a lot of magic, and then you have letterism involved into that. And from that, I think, evolved everything that we have now. And the memetic occultism is, right, this internet meme in its simplest form is a form of magic that the regular layperson can understand. And it's a very effective tool to spread information, to convey a message, even if it's occult in nature or not, to convey a message that the regular person can interact with and find it funny or entertaining or whatever it is. They got the message. And it's interesting because pictorial magic is one of the things that Paracelsus talked about in the 16th century. They were like, listen, images, people remember images more than they do text. So when you present an image, an internet meme, for example, and you overlay, or you present the image, boom, they got it from the image. Boom, you grabbed them. And then they take 2 seconds to read the text. That solidifies it right there. Writing, bro. Writing is very powerful. And the thing with chaos magic, it sounds chaotic. So much chaos, so much noise, I can't comprehend it. No, no, no. It's organization beyond comprehension. It's so organized and so structured, you can't even grasp how organized it is, right? It's kind of paradoxical. It's like, wait a minute, what? But essentially, the concept of chaos magic is, yes, how LaVey was saying, throw out all the mumbo jumbo, all the woo-woo stuff. Focus on the now. Belief is their main focus. And that's why it's so important to understand that even if you don't believe in this, even if you don't believe in any other stuff, I just recently reread the Gospel of John. And the first verses of that are very powerful, right? Where the word becomes flesh and it lives among us. And that's interesting because Steiner, in his book Esoteric Cosmology and Esoteric Cosmology, the Rosicrucians would meditate upon those very first lines of the Gospel of John, and they were able to enter an altered state of consciousness where they were able to enter the text and interact on the other side with these biblical figures in that story. They've seen Jesus Christ in reality.
Let me pump the brakes. You said the Rosicrucians were meditating upon the Gospel of John, the words in the Gospel of John. Is that who you said?
Yeah, the Gospel of John, the first verses, they practice a mantra, and it's got a name. I forgot. Exertus had told me the name, and I forgot the name of it. But it's a form of, I'm not going to call it mysticism, but it's a form of being able to contemplate upon the Bible, and you're able to relive these, what some people would call stories. I do think that the Bible did happen in a there's a historical dimension to it. So I do believe that Jesus Christ was a real person. All the people within the Bible were real people. Now I think that the Bible is layered upon layers. So there's an allegorical, there's an alchemical point of view. There's a historical point of view. So there's various ways you can read. And that's why in Philip K. Dick's the Divine Invasion, they banned the holographic Bible, because people are able to project this holographic Bible and they're able to overlay the Bible on top of each other and see all the correlations and connections, and it opens up this entire other cosmology and worldview of the Bible that's like, wait a minute. In my opinion, the Bible is one of these forms of interdimensional literature where that is the portal, bro. Like that, the writing. But think about this. If you're able to practice the light side of it, the good, the stuff that isn't of the darkness, they can do the same with the dark stuff. So for example, I'm talking about text, geometry being a way of accessing other realms or other intermediary beings. Shout out to Tommy Cohen, who wrote, I recently did a interview on this on my podcast where we got into William Burroughs, right? A chaos magician, and the idea of using text to transport the consciousness of the reader to other realms. And I think it's gotten as simple as that, because if we're talking about magical systems simplifying down to the furthest, you know, to the smallest form, like memetics, right? The smallest form of information is a meme. Well, let's think about magic. Any magical system is dumbed down, so anyone can tap into it. And that's why chaos magic is at the forefront of that, because it's the simplified version of any magical system, right? And anyone can really use it. And that's the dangerous part about it too, because they don't need all the robes and the daggers and the chalices and all that. No, no, no. They can simply use an internet meme. Mm. And you're exposed to something. The golden bough, you know, sympathetic magic, the golden ball, you know?
Do you think, okay, so, all right, so in the Bible,
I'm sorry, bro. I know you didn't want to go too deep, but
I know I wanted to get to know Juan Ayala. We already that ship already sailed. We'll have to save that for the next time I interview you. So I want to talk about Honda S2000s.
Yeah.
Where you live and what got you into this, but who cares now? I guess no. The God spoke the world into existence. Like there's something with the spoken word versus text, and I only really considered this idea when I read Diana Pasulka's Encounters book. Have you read that yet?
I have not read it, but I am familiar with her work.
Okay. Yes. So she talks about how Socrates would only transmit his knowledge through the oral tradition, and he was very much against writing. And Plato was also he took Socrates' stuff and, you know, moved it further. And he was also against the idea of writing. And
yeah, Grapha Dogmata, which is what they called it, the unwritten doctrines that even Plato said that it was so crazy, it was so intense that by writing it down, it would obliterate you. Like it would destroy you. So I am familiar with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand that. It just seems crazy to me that why wouldn't we write things down so that it could be preserved for, you know, generations to come?
So there's two lines of thoughts, of ideas when it comes to that. Some people believe, and this includes indigenous thought as well, that the oral tradition is to be less contaminated or perverted, if you will. But if you think about it, do you remember what the last thing your wife said to you was? Probably not. Yeah. Right. So if you had to guess, you'd probably slap something together and be like, oh, well, see you later or something like that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to me, I'm in this, and that's why maybe there are two. Maybe there's a White Lodge and a Black Lodge. And mind you, they're saying this stuff, Isaac. They might have been initiates. So they're telling you this, the exoteric. It's going to destroy you. We can't write it down. You know, gosh, we can't say these things. That's the exoteric. But the Pythagoreans also did the same thing. They would literally, only the initiates were able to see Pythagoras. They were like, no, you have to have a veil. You're in front of us. How do I know I'm talking to even a real person? And how do we know that these people were even real people? I mean, we can go down that line. But the point being that they were part of the Eleusinian Mysteries was around the same time, right? Like all these secret societies, secret groups, secret organizations, and we can't really trust what they're telling us. And that's why I like studying it from all points of views in all different ways. But there you have that idea that the oral tradition is unperverted, and when it's passed down, it stays pure. But I would say, and I would argue the same thing for written things, because there it's written in stone. You can pass it on and you can look at it and go, okay, that's what that says. Let me copy it again. Or let me change some of it. I mean, it could still be changed up. You know, it could still be manipulated and changed. So
it all goes back. I feel like the fidelity of the original, you know, the original writing holds up better than playing Whisper Down the Lane. That's what I just don't understand it. But yeah. When I read Manly P. Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages, or attempt to read it, I can't help but think this is the best example of this exoteric idea that you're presenting, where they publish this book. Obviously any mouth breather like me can just go buy the book, and I'm reading it and, oh, I'm learning all the mysteries of the Illuminati. No way, dude. Like they're, and when you read it, you could tell it doesn't really make a lot of sense. And that's kind of the one thing I appreciate about what Anton LaVey was saying in the Satanic Bible. I was like, yeah, he's right. These all this occult mumbo jumbo, trying to understand it and going to the source text. I wonder if we just don't throw all these books away and just say, well, there was an oral tradition and we're not part of that and we'll never know. Like that's kind of what it comes down to, maybe.
And you have people who are just straight up oral tradition. But coincidentally, today I got a message from somebody, I think it was on TikTok or something like that, where they were talking about the true name of God. And they were like, oh, they were saying something along the lines, oh, so-and-so said that they know the true name of God. And I'm like, I don't think anyone knows the true name of God. I think if we were able to find out the true name of God, you would cease to exist, because it's that powerful, right? And that's the whole thing with the Tetragrammaton, where it's the ineffable name of God. Like you can't say it. You're not supposed to say it. That's the secret that the Masons have, right? Where you're able to manipulate reality in some sort of way by knowing the name of God. Like, how does that work? Right. Like, and that's why I've always wondered, like the books, like the books such as the Book of Enoch, where they've taken it out of the canon. It's still in some canons of, I think, the Ethiopic Bible is one of the oldest Bibles, and it's in their canon. But if you read the Book of Enoch, it's number one, it's one of the most psychedelic books there is, and it's a journey. Now there's one Enoch, two Enoch, three Enoch, and I've even seen a fourth Enoch as well. First Enoch, that's fine. They didn't include it in the canon. Second, third, people say that it was just extracurricular fan fiction type of stuff. But the third Enoch is really interesting, because at the end of that book, at the very end, and this is what I think that they're occulting from us. And now I'm not saying that we're going to become like gods or any of that stuff. I'm just thinking outside the box. What if what they're occulting from us isn't in that book, at the very end of that story, Enoch becomes Metatron. He becomes this overseer of reality. He becomes the little Yahweh, lesser Yahweh. He takes a seat on a throne next to God. And what if that's what they're truly occulting from us, of not being able to achieve godhood? I don't think anyone can be God. But once you learn the secrets, because he was being taught everything by the Watchers. The Watchers were watching the divine alchemists at work, and that's how they were able to pass that information to the daughters of men. And think about this. That's why alchemy is so important, because the magnum opus is that. You transcend reality. You step out of it. You peace out. You dissolve into nothingness once you achieve that magnum opus. Now, the funny part is that the people who have achieved the magnum opus, they can't tell you, because guess what? They're not here anymore to tell you how they achieved it. So you see how it's paradoxical, where it's like, oh, that's convenient. It's like, why don't you tell me how to do the magnum opus? Why? I ceased to exist. Yeah. Once you achieved that, I was able to step out of reality and manipulate it. Now I'm this immortal being outside of space and time. Space and time mean nothing to me. And that's the same thing that happened with Enoch. He turned into Metatron, an angel, and was able to manipulate reality from the outside.
And I'm sure you're aware of this, but Santana said he was in contact with Metatron as well. The guitarist Santana. Yeah. He thought he was Metatron. Yeah, dude. Pretty crazy. But yeah, there's something interesting about that. And that's what I would assume you probably find this too in your studies. What's so fascinating to me is this recurring theme, this sort of cyclical nature of humanity, that we keep going back to these occult arts, all the way back to the Book of Enoch and the Watchers, who were teaching them how to, you know, divinate and do alchemy and all this crap. And then the ideas of Hermes and Thoth teaching alchemy to people in ancient Egypt and the Emerald Tablets. It just feels like we're on this loop of this sort of Tower of Babel story, where we finally unlock this technology. We're going to become like gods and do our own thing. And then God smites us. And I mean, I don't know how, when you see the, you know, where technology is going with AI and all this stuff, it just seems like we're going down that path yet again. So I don't know. And this is where because when I started researching all this, my whole shtick for years and years and years was, look, I'm a Christian, but we're not bringing that filter into this thing, because I approached it from a scientific perspective. Is what I was trying to do is say, I'm going to put that belief system aside. I'm just going to present the information. But I think ultimately you come back around and you end up having to take a spiritual path. And that seems to me, you know, like we were saying earlier, when are we tools for the revelation of the method? I would like to think that I'm a tool for people to understand what's happening before it's too late, so that they can, you know, pick their path. You know, I'm not saying like, yeah, Taylor Swift's giving us Illuminati symbolism, so therefore you can't listen to Taylor Swift if you want to go to heaven. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying you can listen to her music. And I know this is a conversation I recently had with my mom. She saw me talking bad about Taylor Swift. She's like, she loves her, you know. You saying that you think she worships the devil? And I'm like, look, Mom, I don't think she does. I think she's a tool. I'm just saying, if you're a Taylor Swift fan, remain a fan. Just don't start doing witchcraft.
They got a cult going on, bro. Witchcraft. They got a cult going on at this point.
Dude, it's bad. It's bad, dude.
Yeah.
They're charging up that just like you said, this magical sigil sort of ritual thing. They're charging it up for the Super Bowl and the Taylor Swift Eras Tour, with all this nonsense on the news about how she saved the U.S. economy and she's... it's wild, dude. It's really? Unbelievable. Oh yeah, dude. There's all these articles about how Taylor Swift, she made the NFL over $300 million by showing up to some games, and she saved the U.S. economy last year with her Eras Tour and all this crap. It's like, this is the most absurd thing, because I've been researching a lot of investment stuff the last year, because I was into crypto for a while. I'm kind of trying to study stocks and understand, you know, how that works a little bit more. So it's just the most absurd thought. I do think Taylor Swift contributes to local economies. If she showed up to my little hometown here, you know, sure, like there'd be all this tourism and like, yeah, for sure she brings money in. But to say she saved the U.S. economy and she made the NFL $350 million, like, that's insane.
And yeah,
it's just them charging up this idea that she is a goddess, and all the Swiftie cult needs to remain worshiping her. And now they can tell their friends, well, you see how great she is, because she, you know, gave Travis Kelce a name, you know. And it's like, bro, come on.
And that's why, to me, the homunculus concept, or you don't even have to call it a homunculus, you can call it a moon child, is so important. Because what if, right? Because we always talk about the elites and how they are in control and in power, and there's corruption in the government, right? Between all these families, they're interbreeding, et cetera, et cetera. Well, What if there are people who are put in this world specifically to serve one purpose and their birth was timed to, right? Because they believe in stars. That's part of making talismans. You got to have the astronomical alignment as well as the astrological alignment. So it's a combination of two. And they were born this day at this time and they were meant to serve that purpose because they're able to, that technology that they're using, they're able to play out these myths that we've all heard about throughout history of usually it's two brothers against one another, or this god betrays the other god, or whatever it is, and they're able to play out, right? The world's a stage. Yeah. Speaking of the magic of letters and words, grammar, grimoire, I mean, that's all connected there. There's something about that. I was texting you, I got summoned today at the court for the first time ever to do jury duty. I was summoned, bro. Like, am I a jinn? Like, what am I? I'm a genie, bro. You summoned me to I don't have a law degree to be.
Yeah. And Jordan Maxwell, he was one of the early sort of figures talking about symbolism. And he talks about the symbolism of Saturn all over the place and judges wear the black robe. And he says that's a reference to Saturn, of course, you know?
Yeah. So you have William Shakespeare, the world's a stage. Mm-hmm. Every man, every woman has their entrances and exits, right? They have their lines, their parts, and all that stuff. Well, that's how it is, dude. I think that there are certain figures that they're imbued and combined with certain powers. And that's back again to the simplification of magic. Well, maybe they aren't the actual Babylon incarnated, but they have the essence of it. And that was the whole thing with the Moon Child ritual, where it was about, it was going to be a regular person, but they were going to have the essence, the soul, the spirit of this higher being. And then that being was able to interact into this, in this reality. I mean, Parsons believed that he was saving reality by doing the Babylon working ritual. I mean, that was what his ideas and thoughts, that he was saving reality, balancing out the masculine and feminine in the whatever this is.
Could you tell me more about that? I just had a conversation. I do a podcast called Breaking Social Norms with my wife, where part of the shtick is it's me, the conspiracy guy, trying to explain and simplify stuff for, you know, my wife, who's a normie. She takes on the role of a normie. She's way more smarter than she lets on sometimes, but she plays the role so that it slows me down, because a lot, just like, you know, when I'm listening to your show, sometimes I think, God, I wish we could do a show where I could be the normie and be like, okay, slow down. Who are you talking about here, dude? We had a conversation about sex magic, and I was trying to explain the different ideas of polarities. And like in Tantra, there's a lot of focus on the male and female and being in balance, like with the yin and yang is kind of the most well-known example. Could you rewind a touch and tell me what you just said about the male and female with the magic thing? Like,
this is in regards to the Babylon working ritual of Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard in the desert in 1940. I think it was like from 1945 or something like that, 1947, something like that. Around that time, for a period of, I think it was 4 or 5 months, he was piggybacking off of the Moon Child book, allegedly, that was published in 1929, written by Crowley in 1917, I think it was. In that, it's a story about two sects of magicians, white, black, and they're fighting over this woman who is going to be giving birth to this moon child. Now, he took that and he created his own system. He created his own ritual to be able to incarnate what some people believe he actually did was Marjorie Cameron, the Scarlet Woman. But in alchemy, you have something known as the divine hermaphrodite, which is what you're saying, reaching this balance of the masculine, feminine. And in alchemy, it's shown as the rebus, which we know Bad Bunny has tattooed on his chest. And it's about balancing both out. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, because there's just so many different cosmologies when it comes to it, but it's essentially about finding this energy. And it's interesting because depending on who you ask, for example, I'll use this example to see of two magicians that didn't quite agree, but still ended up working together and still did their own systems. You have, right, Crowley, who believed in the, how do I put this, Sodomic formula, if you catch my drift, right? Because we know that's a whole thing, the eye of Horus and all these different things and the okay. third eye. Well, there's a lot of places where that could be, okay? And Grant didn't agree with that. He believed that it was actually the, without getting too vulgar, the menstruation of a woman, what he would refer to as a, different bodily fluids, if you will, that were the key. Crowley believed it was the sodomic stuff, which use your imagination. And then Grant was like, no. You can still achieve the same thing, but you're doing it all wrong. Well, they were both tapping into the same force, if you will, by using different techniques. And that's why, Isaac, it's a technology. That's why it's like the Jedi and the Sith. They're both tapping into the same pool of energy. They're using it and utilizing it differently. Some of them are using it for good. Some of them are using it for evil. You know what I mean? So I think it's a form of technology where you're able to open the faucet or close it or reverse the flow or do whatever it is. And there needs to be some sort of balance. And I think that's where the masculine and feminine comes into, because they both serve their own purpose within the occult. You know, you have the phallus, which is one thing, and then you have the yoni, which is another thing. So I think that's it's about finding the sweet spot. And I think some of them lean more one way than they do the others. And I think they're able to tweak their magical system depending on that. You know what I mean? So it's a very interesting concept, but unless you're an occultist that's practicing it, I don't know how you would explain it. Because I mean, I've read so much that it's all, you know, it changes over time.
I read one of the books I always refer people to is Michael Flowers, Dr. Michael Flowers, Lords of the Left-Hand Path. And I read it years and years ago. And you know how this goes. You'll read it a few years ago by, and then you'll reread parts of it and say, oh, wow, I didn't catch that the first time. And one of the themes was that he talks about the left-hand path and the right-hand path. And the right-hand path is, to sort of oversimplify it, is being inside the stream of God's consciousness, law and order kind of ideas of going with the flow and sort of adhering to the dogmas of the social construct and the church and all those things. Left-hand path is your sort of satanic variety that says, no, I want to be outside of the stream of God. I want to be my own, you know, maker of my own destiny. Degenerate. Yeah. And it was, he said in there, he had I don't have it handy, but there was this idea that the two things are in balance in our universe, like the mm-hmm. Shakti and the Shiva, but the left-hand path being the rebellious sort of Luciferian archetype wants to break the balance and sort of shear off the wheel and throw the whole thing out of whack, because they think that that's the path for their salvation. They don't care what it does to the rest of us. And yeah. that's like sort of the black magic, the black lodge ideas that I'm always telling people when I say, look, I don't, you know, people are witches and do magic and worship Satan, like whatever. My only beef with the only time that I'll step in and say, like, I don't think people should do this is when we get into this idea of sort of satanic black magic stuff of someone channeling. Because I'm kind of a...
The heck was that, bro?
I don't know, man. I got fireworks going off behind me.
That was what so is good. That?
I unlocked Gnosis, bro. Dude, I'm ascending. That
was so weird.
I've made the magnum opus. See you guys later.
No, dude.
That was bizarre, what? Man. I've never had that happen before.
Oh, man.
Now I lost my train of thought. Anyway.
So what you're saying about that was... Okay, that was... Because that was right on, like, cue. Like, boom. As soon as he said that, it just like went off.
That's weird, man. See, stuff like this happens, and I think, you know, synchronicities are weird, and I don't know, weird things happen that sort of take you out of path sometimes. That's kind of strange.
So let's simplify it even further, because again, these are concepts that you will run into in the occult, and depending on who you study, some are going to be hyper focused on the left, right. In Freemasonry, you have the two pillars, right? Left, right. And there's always the one obscured pillar, which is the middle path. But essentially, think about it. If you're going to walk, let's just oversimplify. If you're going to walk too far to the left, you're going to hit the pillar there. If you walk too far to the right, you're going to hit that pillar there. And it's about finding right that equilibrium of being able to walk in between. Now, how you said, every side has their own cosmologies, has their own doctrines, has their own way of functioning. How every single religion has their own way of functioning, doctrines, cosmology, all these different things. And of course, dude, it's always been like, oh, my side's the best. But yeah, left hand, not to get crude, but they blast their seat over everything, right? They charge sigils and do all these different things. Right hand, you hold it in, you meditate, right? So think about meditation, semen retention, like mm-hmm. the opposite. Magical yeah. masturbation, whatever you want to call it, like all that stuff, you keep it in, you build it further in yourself. These other guys are like, no, I'm just gonna rah, you know, everywhere. That's yeah. the way I've come to understand it. And they get mad when you call them degenerates too, by the way.
Well, I'm a degenerate, so that wouldn't yeah. if I said it, it's not judgmental. But the yeah, that's kind of a he describes the different polarities as the Apollonian and Dionysian ritual, whereas mm-hmm. the Dionysian is overloading the senses with drumming and sex and sort of self-gratification things, and Apollonian's more of isolation and being like a monk and, you know, finding purity.
Exactly.
Either way, it gets you in contact with God, or so they think, right?
Well, and that's, you got Gurdjieff, right? The way that where it's like, okay, fine. Yeah. You know, and again, it gets really weird. I've done an episode, I still don't understand it, but it's about finding your true self and all. And I think that's what they're talking about. It's more of like a looking within the inner space of Carl Jung, if you will, which I think is also I was listening to Terrence McKenna today, and he was talking about extraterrestrials, right? Because I know that's a hot topic right now. You and I had done the Miami Mall monsters, aliens, yeah. whatever that was, that episode, which... Dude, I got so much feedback from that it was crazy. I mean, people were going nuts over that.
And yeah, that one's a banger, dude. I got tons of feedback on that. I was like, okay, we unlocked a magic combination. We got to all get together again.
And so he talks about the ET being at the very end of the road.
Really?
It's us, like us. And that the ET was introduced into the mainstream to shock, he calls it, I forget which kind of shock it is, but it shocks the people, because from the ancient times now, the standard that was put forth was the standard of right Jesus Christ, and anything outside that was looked down upon as demonic or whatever it is. And he says that the UFO serves as this thing that's going to be able to break that paradigm. And it's weird, right? Because it's going to break the paradigm of Jesus, God, not truly being who he said he was. And that it's more of like, no, it's like this. Prometheus, right? The movie Prometheus, aliens. Like, no, we were created by this other race of beings in some faraway galaxy or whatever it is. Like, no, that's the truth. It wasn't the Son of God didn't die for your sins type of thing. Like, no. Forget about all that. We're just focus on the aliens. And right now there's this huge push for this disclosure. And here you have, again, Terrence McKenna was, some people say it was CIA or FBI or whatever he was. Maybe he might have been pushing these ideas even further. But at the end of the day, he goes, once you realize that there are no aliens, essentially, and at the very end, it's you. Like, your soul is alien. Like, that's the thing that's here. That and the UFO is like a, he calls it like a 3D projection of the soul in some sort. Again, it was a very, you know how he can get philosophical and go on and on, but essentially saying that the UFOs were here to discredit the religious movement. Because if you think about it, for the longest time, that was the doctrine. The church was the ruling power. And I mean, still is in some sort of way, but right, in God we trust. We don't know which God, but hopefully it's the one that we all know and love. Mm-hmm. But he said it's going to break us away from that. And it's going to be like, no. Then you open up the possibilities to it being something of extraterrestrial origin. Like these movies that they put in front of, like Prometheus is the perfect example. It's like, no, it wasn't God. God didn't create you.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't create you 6,000 years ago. It was this this race of beings that came here and seated us here, and they made us.
Yeah,
you know, here's the proof. They told us.
What interview was that with Terrence McKenna? I want to listen to that. Do you know?
I'm gonna send it to you. I'm gonna send it to you right now.
Okay.
It's called Terrence McKenna, The Abyss, and it's called the channel's Danit Friedman. I'm gonna send you the link.
Okay.
And he's talking about different. Again, I love Terrence McKenna because it's just there's so much there to pull at, and he's really opened me up to a lot of different ideas. And funny enough, he was talking about the UFO, which is a hot thing. And I'm sure that interview was from years ago. I mean, he died in 90 something. And so this concept.
I'm picturing Stamets, the mushroom hat.
No,
guy.
No, sorry, dude.
Yeah, Paul Stamets. McKenna, food of the gods guy, right?
Yes.
Okay, yes, gotcha.
So yeah, him. Food was it? Food of the gods, right? The mushroom.
Anyways. Yeah, where he said that religious experience came from people hallucinating and stuff.
Yes.
Which I'm not like terribly opposed to that, not to self-incriminate or anything, but I could see why people could feel that way. It is a strange territories, but
I think, dude, that's part of the puzzle, right? This puzzle that we've been talking about. I think that these substances force you to be open. I think people are able to achieve that, like a Wim Hof, where you're able to achieve altered state of consciousness using this, bro. This right here is one of the most powerful computers that there is. And I think, right, we're made in the image of God, and God is all powerful on earth. So we have some of that divine spark within us, and we're able, dude. I mean, you have the Rosicrucians meditating on the text. He gave you the word, meditate on it, and you're able to go in to the word and interact on the other side. So that says a lot. I mean, how powerful that is. But the same way that they're able to do that, other schools, other paths, other lodges are able to do the same, right? They're able to use that same technology and invert it and pervert it. And maybe that's where you get as above, so below. Who knows? I mean, this inversion, perversion, we see this over and over again. And it's another tactic, if you will. But they're tapping into the same source.
What's your take on aliens then? You've read enough occult literature now that you're, I would say, an expert on the occult. What do you think this is? Do you think they're extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional? Do you think they're shape-shifting lizards? Do you have any, like, you know, I understand that there's no way to know any of these things. I have to like always weigh my opinion. I'm like, yeah, I'm like 90%. Like for me, I think I'm 90% that these are extra-dimensional entities of some kind.
Ultra-terrestrials. Yeah.
Yeah. Like John.
Keel. Yeah. That's where I stand more than anything, bro. And the concept of space perhaps not being a real concept, not being a real thing. Now, I'm not saying that the world is flat. I'm saying that maybe the way that it's been painted to us isn't 100%, including space. And the reason why I think that, and the reason why I think that these entities or these things are of occult nature, is because you have entire literature supporting the use of extraterrestrials in magical operations. And by that, I'm talking about Kenneth Grant, H.P. Lovecraft, the Cthulhu mythos, which is one of my favorite mythos, because I've always been a sucker for sci-fi. I've always been a sucker for the weird, the strange. That's what I grew up with. I grew up with reading about the Bermuda Triangle here in Florida. I grew up reading about Bigfoot. So I was always gravitated towards like this weird fringe 14, if you will, type of way of looking at things. And when you tie in Dungeons and Dragons, which I love Dungeons and Dragons too, I love playing Skyrim, I love all these games that we grew up with, right? And it's like Crash Bandicoot, bro. We had like portals in that game. You jump through the portal. I don't know how old you are. I was like, I'm 29, but I remember playing the first PlayStation game I ever played, PlayStation 1, was Crash Bandicoot. And okay, it was about
I'm familiar with it. I never played it though.
Well, it's like interdimensional, so you go in and you're like this little, I forgot what he's like,
like a fox or something.
He's got a name though. I looked it up on an episode once. Anyways, you're like this little creature and you go in and you're jumping from dimension to dimension, you know, beating all the levels and everything. And, so this interdimensional aspect of it. And I've noticed that in the occult, there is a use for space and extraterrestrials. I love Dungeons and Dragons. I love all that weird stuff. And that has some Lovecraftian aspects of it. It's like, well, there's entire groups of occultists who adopt these gods, great old ones, elder things, whatever you want to call them, and use them for their ceremonial purposes. And you go, wait a minute, wasn't this supposed to be made up? Like I had somebody comment on, I think it was the episode we did of the Miami Mall Monsters, were like, why do you keep bringing up Lovecraft? He was just an author. It was all fiction. And I go, tell me you know absolutely nothing about the Typhonian OTO without telling me that you know absolutely nothing about the Typhonian OTO. Right. That's their whole thing.
Yeah. And the Church of Satan and the Temple of Set, they used H.P. Lovecraft rituals and stuff like that.
Did so, they really?
Yeah, dude. If you get into, man, I'm trying to think of where I read that. Order of the Nine Angles. Have you read into them?
Oh, man. I know about them. I haven't read any of their stuff, but I heard some really dark stuff.
I read two books about them, and they base a lot of stuff on the same, you know, because Michael Aquino set up the Temple of Set, and he used a lot of, he took, because from what I understand, this is me going off the cuff, I could be wrong, Anton LaVey had all these varieties of rituals, one of which was H.P. like H.P. Lovecraft, Cthulhu, Necronomicon blend of stuff. Then Aquino branched off and set up Temple of Set, and I think he was focused pretty much solely on that aspect, where he was like, no, this is the truth, the Necronomicon mixed in with H.P. Lovecraft, Cthulhu stuff.
So if you think about that, because I think this ties everything together, right? So to tie this all in and just put it in a, just to keep it in a bag and kind of together, let's use Lovecraft as an example, where we alluded to the elites, maybe perhaps being right, or even artists, maybe perhaps being in touch with otherworldly entities, and maybe perhaps being used in some sort of way. And it might be unknowingly, who knows, right? And that's where the ultra terrestrial aspect comes into play, where I believe there are the sect of aliens that are entities from maybe not another planet, but another dimension, interdimensional. And maybe that is the jinn. Maybe those are the demons. Maybe those are everything else that we've seen in folklore and historical and religious scripture. But if we focus on Lovecraft for one second, you know, I talked about the letter aspect of text being portals. I've been warned not to read Kenneth Grant a certain type of way, as to not open up a portal, because his work has that aspect of it. William Burroughs' work also has that aspect of it, because it's the cut-up method, which is a form of divination, and it's supposed to put you in this trance where it takes your consciousness and drops it off in other realms. And that's coming from directly from William Burroughs' esotericist, by the way. But if we focus on Lovecraft, where he was being contacted through his dreams, and in that same lecture that I sent you with Terrence McKenna, he talks about different abysses. And the concept of the dream realm being perhaps the true realm, where you're able to really, and that this reality is just like a base reality, and the real reality is the dream world. Well, that gets into Lovecraft, where he was being contacted by these entities that consist of the Cthulhu mythos. And he wrote these stories because of his dreams, because of his night terrors, because of his nightmares. Now, think about this. What if those are the forces on the other side trying to break in, and the only way that they're able to break in is through the use of literature? And if you think of literature, if you think of letters, if you think of all these shapes and symbols and everything that consist of letters, that's geometry, okay? And that's why John Dee, Edward Kelly, it was the grid, the geometry, moving around in certain ways to form the names of these entities on the other side to access them. Well, think about it. What if they talked to H.P. Lovecraft because he was, some considered him a messiah. Okay, there's literature saying that Lovecraft was a messiah, that he was being contacted by these great old ones on the other side, and he wrote these stories and wrote them into existence. And they were able to break that barrier through the use of this literature to enter our reality in some sort of weird way. Okay. I mean, we know that sacred geometry is a thing. Well, just simplify it. We're talking about the simplification of magic. Simplify it further down. Sigils. Well, letters. That's the geometry to be able to access these other realms, in my opinion. And I think that the portals, bro, are the books. And that's why Yale has so many different book, and not just any book, it's got to be a certain type of book and a certain way to write it. Maybe it's the books written in blood, who knows, like who or semen, or who knows. I mean, because this all this is part of the occult. There's various ways of skinning the cat. There's various ways of accessing these things on the other side. There's various ways of entering. And that's why, bro, Not that I want to know how to do it, but I want to be able to understand it to some extent. And this is from hours and hours of research and hours of videos and books and everything that I've been able to somewhat paint a picture of what might be going on. I still don't understand it.
Dude, there's so many ways we could take this. I know you'll appreciate this. There was this guy, Cornelius Agrippa, who's very prominent in the realm of the occult. And in the news, I think it was maybe 5 years ago. I don't know if you caught this or not. There was a news thing that they studied under a microscope, his book, some original text of his. And they found that there was, I'm probably going to get this wrong. I should look this up before I repeat it because I'm going way back. And there was a signature in blood that they couldn't see originally on one of the pages or something like that. I saved a news guy. I got to look on my computer because years ago I found that and I thought, well, that's so bizarre. It's probably pretty obscure. I don't know if you can find it, but there's something with the spelling of a word, and the spell is obviously close. I think that you're probably onto something there, dude. I'm not opposed to that line of thinking at all. Now, you talked about, to sort of bring back to the beginning of the show, I find it interesting that you, because I also was one of these people really into the paranormal as a child, you know, anything with Bermuda Triangle, Bigfoot, that kind of stuff also would get my attention. I had these little choose your own, I'm 44, so I'm going way back to the 80s here. They used to have these choose your own adventure books that always had
Goosebumps.
That was after me, but yeah, I have one.
I know what you're talking about. Turn a page, da da da. If you want to do this,
Was Goosebumps that way too?
Goosebumps did the same thing too. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. And you're kind of customizing your own book in that way. But anyways, I was always drawn to the alien, the paranormal stuff of those books. But I was thinking about it because my last question for you, I want to talk to you about Twin Peaks for a second. I was watching, I'm doing an analysis episode by episode. I'm currently, the audience who's on the Patreon feed there and my supporter feeds, they're on, I think it's season 2, episode 8 right now, which is right around the time they find out who killed Laura Palmer. So we don't want to spoil anything after that, but I'm actually doing the research for the season finale of season 2 right now, because that's where I'm at on the recording process. And you'll find in the storyline, I don't know if you caught this, there's an element referencing King Arthur in Glastonbury Grove. And it triggered a memory for me. That was my first sort of red pill moment. I remember in elementary school, it was either fourth grade or fifth grade. I remember in the library being really intrigued by this book about King Arthur and Excalibur and the Lady of the Lake. I didn't understand it at the time, and I've never revisited the topic. I just remember in that, you know, in elementary school, just every time I go to the library, I'd find this book, and I was always drawn to this book. And I can't help but think that you were talking about dreams being sort of the real reality. And as you know, in Twin Peaks, that's a recurring theme, is this idea of dreams and entities maybe communicating with us. And I can't help but think that guys like you and me that nerd out on this stuff, which is not a lot of people that nerd out on this stuff. There really isn't. It's something must be drawing us to this. And I can't help but think that maybe there's entities that, or maybe it's tied to our birthdays. I don't know what it is. It's something though, because for whatever reason, guys like you and I start digging into these books and we can't stop trying to figure it out. Right.
This name. So to be clear, so you don't spoil it for me, Isaac, I'm one episode away from finishing season 2.
Okay. All right, you're the best episodes right there. The last two episodes of the season.
I'm one episode away from finishing. Then I'm going to watch Fire Walk With Me, and Donut just finished season 1, so he's initiated. So Donut's already initiated.
Good, all he's right. in.
He's in. Yeah. He's in the club. He survived. He's like, bro, it was really creepy. I was scared. I was like, no, it's all right, bro.
I was scared.
It's all right. He was scared. Yeah, he was scared. I was like, don't worry about it, bro. It's gonna get way worse, and it's gonna go everywhere and anywhere you want it to go. But this Glastonbury Grove, you said.
Yeah.
I'm looking because right on the topic of dreams, Lovecraft was shown, and I know space is faking gay, but hear me out for 1 second. Lovecraft was shown the Pluto 5 years before it was a planet, and there is a mountain on Pluto named after Cthulhu. Okay, check this out. But there was one area, I'm trying to find it. It was some sort of grove that was revealed to, and I want to say it's this one. Hold on, let me see. I'm trying to find it. But Lovecraft was also shown this grove, and I think it might have been Glastonbury Grove. So there's definitely something there about that grove and it being, again, this gateway or portal to another realm, if you catch my drift, right?
Yeah.
So I could have sworn. I'm going to find the video. I know which video it is. I'm going to rewatch and I'm going to send it to you because it was about the life of I've covered H.P. Lovecraft before, and there was one particular dream that was really interesting because he was shown this area, and I want to say it was this Glastonbury.
Oh, that would be a trip, dude.
That would be wild.
You can even just send me the video if you don't have time to watch it, because there's I think that's in the mythology of King Arthur, because I was watching the episode, and I think it's actually the episode before the last episode where they mention Glastonbury Grove. I don't think it's the last episode, so you might have already seen it and not maybe didn't register, but I think that's the burial place of King Arthur, because that's where I'm as I'm revisiting the mythology of King Arthur, because I don't remember much of it from being a kid, besides they had these drawings of the Lady of the Lake and the Excalibur sword, and I was always really fascinated about this woman who came from the lake, and I don't know, just as a kid it was always real intriguing. But there's a lot of, you know, I used to do earlier on, I think she was like my second or third guest, Rosette de la Croix. She still maintains a blog. I need to reach out to her because I know she posted several articles and analyzing King Arthur and its occult connections. And I think she also did Twin Peaks stuff, but at the time I hadn't watched it, so I didn't care. So I know there's some heavy duty occult affiliations with King Arthur is what I'm getting at, but.
Oh, definitely 100%. I mean, Merlin was half demon, half human. And that's how he was able to get his powers.
Yeah. He was the archetype of the magician is Merlin, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of Twin Peaks? You know, last sort of question, I'll let you go. What do you think of Twin Peaks so far? Are you as intrigued by it as I am? Or are you kind of like, I don't know, dude, it's just a show. It's fine. There's some occult stuff there. Like, what's your take?
So I've mentioned to you, because a lot of people get turned off by the first season. The first season to me is the initiation. Now, I know nothing about the writers. I know nothing. I think it was named Robert Frost and Lynch. I know that they're... I know Lynch, I've been told things about him that are like make him kind of weird, like he's a weird character. And I don't know if he's a good weird or a bad weird. But when I watched the first season, number one, I thought it was pretty funny. I enjoyed it. And very exaggerated in some parts. Some parts legitimately made me laugh. They were funny. You learn to not fall in love with the characters, but you learn to like the characters.
Oh, you'll fall in love with them. The first couple times I watched it, there's characters I hated, and I was like, "This is so stupid. Why am I hate this part of the story?" But now I'm like, I want to know everything about everybody.
Well, here's the thing, dude. That the villains in that show, this is only from the season one to almost the end of season two, and I haven't watched the movies yet or read the books, so I'm still fresh. The villains in that story. What bothered me was the villains in the story in the show. Weren't as badass looking as I thought. You know what I'm saying? Like if you think of like, oh, this crazy wizard looks like he looks dumb. Like, you know, not to be me, but he looks dumb. Like I forgot the dude's name, the one that gets like paralyzed and goes where she has to take care of him in a vegetable state. What's the dude's name? Anyways, but like him, he didn't really look like all that badass. Leo. Yeah, Leo, he didn't look all that badass. And neither did the other guy that ended up going to jail. The diner lady's husband. Yeah, that guy, like,
yeah.
They weren't as cool looking. And then Bob isn't that cool looking either. Like, I'm thinking of, like,
You're speaking to the choir, because right before I started going down the Twin Peaks rabbit hole and actually watching it, I listened to Evolution of Horror podcast sometimes, and they had a mm-hmm. countdown on their Patreon of the top 50 horror movie villains of all time. And it's a younger crowd, so, and I'm an old guy now, and I remember being really appalled because they had like Jason Voorhees came in at like number 25. I was like, are you kidding me? And then anyways, Bob was like in the top five, I think, or something like that, really high up. And I remember I was like, Bob, who's Bob? And I looked it up and I got Twin Peaks Bob. And I was like, that guy, like, that doesn't even look like a scary guy.
That's what I'm saying, bro. Like, but I think that's part of it, dude. Cause we're talking about the esoteric, for those that like that meme that I posted that I sent you yesterday, or it's like my son smiling in the 200. If you know who that is, it'll make sense to you. Like, you're like, oh, look, that, you know, that's Bob. But for those that don't know, it's just some dude, like, you know, like looking crazy.
Even the name isn't scary, Bob. Come on.
Even the name isn't scary, but I think it's more about, in my opinion, the feelings, right? Like what it brings forth, and essentially the feelings is part of the whole lore of that show, right? With Bob and everything, and these entities that are on the other side. And it plays into everything that we've been talking about today, like these things feeding on us from another world, and they're able to. Twin Peaks is real heavy on possession, you know, and that's the scary part about it, that regardless of what your beliefs are, regardless of where you are spiritually, The Exorcist, that involves possession, and possession is universal. It's a one size fits all. Anyone can be possessed. And I mean, we've seen that with nowadays with all the things going on in society with drugs and drinking and all these different things where people transform. And this particular show is heavily on that aspect of something entering you and giving you otherworldly strength, right? Like you're so strong. It's like, because it's not coming from you. You know, it's not you that is, it's this thing on the other side. And then, yeah, I still don't know where I stand with it, though. Am I enjoying it? Absolutely.
Good, good.
And I'm getting to the point where I'm not going to stop watching it. I'm going to finish it. I want I heard that season three is like pedal to the metal, you know, 9,000 RPM up there. It's all the way.
It's going to be the first few episodes are 9,000 RPM. And then episodes 4 through 7 is going to be less than an idol where it's choking off and you're like, is this going to make it?
Oh, you know,
it does this, dude. But you hang in there, dude, because it has its lull and then it goes back up and then it has a lull. And then by the end, you're just like, you know, brain is melting.
I enjoy it. Now, I don't know what effects. Have you felt any effects of the show after the fact?
Yes. Without a doubt, dude. Synchronicities opening up everywhere. Weird things, dude. I should write these down. Is right. I am wondering why this is taking on the sort of energy that it has.
But, well, I mean,
I don't know.
Here's the thing. I'm gonna leave you with this, Isaac. Where even the most academic people, they sometimes refer to certain things as being right. So, the father of modern day crowd psychology. Let me find his name. I forgot his name. So, father of modern day group psychology. No, I did a freaking episode on this already too. So anyways,
sometimes there's too much in there to keep it all locked in.
Yeah, it's not here.
Like, Bernays, Edward Bernays?
No.
Freud, Jung.
Embarrassing, dude. This is crowd psychology. This is so embarrassing, dude.
You know what? You got to forgive yourself, Juan. It's okay. You're still a good person.
Gustave Le Bon. Here we go. Gustave Le Bon. Okay. Here we go. He wrote this book that I covered on one of my shows, The Occult Book Club. And he wrote, right, I forgot the book now. Who cares? Gustave Le Bon. Look him up. He wrote about groups. And he has a checklist on what is a group. Could be a nation of people. Could be a small group of people. A protest, perhaps, right? That we had a lot. And when they come together, they become their own living organism, entity. It becomes one singular unit. And that unit is as smart as the dumbest person in it. So think about that. The group is as smart as the dumbest person in it. And that's why people are emboldened when they're in groups to do things that they wouldn't normally do, because they have that protection of the group and they are taken over by something, right? We're talking about possession, all these things. And there's one thing that stood out to me in that book that was written in 1888, and no one else has really written on group psychology, because this is the father of it. There's one thing he can't account for that he called the contagion. And the contagion was this force that would, he describes it, weaving in and out of the crowd. And this is what causes everyone to come into sync and kind of come together to act as a crowd and like solidifies them. The contagion, an undescribable force. So mind you, this is an academic who's writing about psychology and an actual thing. Like, listen, groups come together, things happen. A group can be a nation, a city, a congregation, whatever you want to call it. And there is a contagion that weaves itself in and out. And it makes me think of everything that we talked about today. Like, what if that is happening on a large scale? If it can happen on a small scale, and a group can be a nation. Hmm. So what if that happens to a nation or on a massive scale, like the world, flat, globe, whatever you want to insert, whatever shape you want here. And what if that's happening? Which I believe it is. I think that there are forces at work that are trying to either come through from the other side in or navigate people and influence people. Maybe the people know, maybe some people call upon these things to enter them. If those are the people in power or not, never going to know. They might be lizard people. They might not be lizard people. But I always tell everyone, I know nothing. I know no more than when I first started. And at the end of the day, it's not cool to say, but at the end of all this stuff, and I know it's not hip, it's God, bro. You find God at the end of it. The answer is always God. Hmm. Like at the end of it all. And I know that's not cool. Oh, okay. No. You need to find God, stick with the light, stick with the good, right? Mm-hmm. And you'll be all right.
Amen, you know, brother.
Yeah, there's nothing else. You haven't lost anything else. You know, people, I get invited all the time, Isaac, to go do seances and open up portals and all this different stuff. And I always tell them, like, listen, I can be a consultant, but I want nothing to do with any of what you're about to do in that area. Okay, yeah. Keep me away from that. So.
I feel you, dude. I'm with you on that. I heed those same warnings, man. I used to ghost hunt and we had a bunch of weird paranormal stuff happen. And, you know, my Orthodox priest says, you better not be doing that. It's no different than Ouija boards or doing seances and magic rituals. Like, you're asking for stuff to come through and it's going to come
100%.
Through. Well, thanks, 100%. Dude. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us for so long. I kept you over. Tell the audience the best place they can listen to your fascinating podcast and follow you on social media and all that stuff.
You can find me anywhere at the Juan on Juan podcast on pretty much any platform. I'm on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram is my main one. And I am launching my second issue of my comic book, The Chosen Juan, which you're in the third issue. So if we're able to pump out the second issue, we're able to bring in other people. We're going to have Merkel. We have Sam Tripoli in the second one. We have Alex Stein. We have a whole bunch of people that, Once we get over this one, we can start developing all six issues. ChosenJuan.com, you can sign up there, and that's the Kickstarter for it. And anything else, you can get your Homunculus Owner's Manual at TJOJP.com. It's 33 pages of jam-packed goodness on how to take care of your homunculus, how to create. If your homunculus is getting out of hand, make sure you check it out. It's by Paranoid American. Yeah. So shout out to him. And yeah, Homunculus Owner's Manual, TJOJP, anywhere else. And you can find my podcast on YouTube, any major podcast platform, all that good stuff, man. I'm everywhere and nowhere all at the same time.
Got it, brother. I'll put the links in the show notes for all of those things. And I'm definitely going to go get on that Kickstarter because I want to inflate my ego and see myself in the comic book someday. You know, it's funny, me and Paranoid American, we've been, as he probably told you, he was one of the first people I ever talked to online way back in the day. I was selling copies of my first book at a convention and he sent me a bunch of cool comic stuff to sort of hand out as giveaways. So it's cool that he's still sticking around. And in fact, I'm getting him on here soon. to talk adrenochrome and all that. So anyways, thanks, Juan. I'm going to drop links to all the stuff. And you guys out there listening, if you like my show, you're going to love One-on-One Podcast, because I've been consuming. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I really don't. I don't have the time. So it's all my time is devoted to researching podcast, and you managed to cross, you check off both the boxes for me, so I actually listened to several of your episodes, and you're doing fantastic work, so thank you very much.
Appreciate you, bro. Yeah, anytime, dude.
All right, brother, I'm gonna let you go. There you go. If you want more, you gotta go subscribe to the One-on-One Podcast. He's digging deep into these occult concepts and these alchemical texts and magical books. In fact, me and him have been talking over the last, I don't even know how long we've been talking, and he sent me a bunch of cool stuff that I'm digging through right now, because I found some really interesting connections to Twin Peaks. I can't say enough good words about this guy. He's really doing some hard work over there, and I appreciate it. And I appreciate his time on here. So go check out his podcast. Go check out his website, tjojp.com. Subscribe to his social media. Go support his Chosen One Kickstarter comic books, all the things, right? I put all the links in the show notes. So be sure to like and subscribe. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Till next time, stay positive.